So today we were commemorating the disappearance day of Shyamananda, and Shyamananda means the bliss of Radha, who was Krishna Shyam. And so Shyamananda and Narottama Das Thakur and Srinivasacharya are the second generation devotees from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were the ones who actually went and preached Krishna consciousness all over eastern India. Of course, there's that whole story that the books of the Goswamis were sent by Shiva Jiva Goswami. So, Om Ganat Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigarve Namaha. The books of the Goswamis were sent by Shiva Jiva Goswami. And these books were taken in an ox cart, guarded, and the books, of course, were stolen by this wonderful king, Veer Ham Veer, who was a dacoit, and then he later reformed himself, took initiation from Srinivasacharya, and turned his whole kingdom into a Krishna conscious kingdom, in which everyone had to chant their rounds every day or else they were kicked out of the kingdom. Pretty good. They all had to go to Mangalarti. I don't know if they had to go to Mangalarti, but anyway, at least they had to chant their rounds and follow the four regulated principles. So, at that time, Shyamananda, of course, was sent to Orissa to preach Krishna consciousness. So let's tell the story about Shyamananda. So Shyamananda was originally called Dukhi. Dukhi means unhappy because in his family, his previous brothers and sisters died shortly after birth. So when he was born, when he appeared, we'd like to use the word appeared rather than born for a great devotee, he had all the signs of a Mahapurusha. And there's different signs of a Mahapurusha, like the length of one's arms, they go down to the knees, if you're standing up, not if you're sitting down. Like my arms really go to my waist, basically, so I'm not a Mahapurusha. And there's different signs on the palms, just like I was recently hearing from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And Gopakumar became the king of one province, and then also he became the king of Jagannath Puri. And it's described that they saw the signs of a king on his body. And the signs on Gopakumar's body were like the different signs of Lord Vishnu, like the conch and the disc and the lotus and everything like that. So by these different signs on the palms and also on the feet, one can ascertain someone's position. Of course, most of us don't have any of those signs on our feet or on our palms, but by the mercy of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, we're somehow or other engaged in devotional service, sometimes in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Fanatic disciples talk about how their guru was sent by Krishna from the spiritual world, but it ain't true, and at least in my case, it ain't true. It's probably sent by from the hellish planets to serve Prabhupada. Anyway, to show Prabhupada's mercy. So anyway, so he had all the signs of Mahapurush. And when he was very young, his father would play with him and say, "My dear little Dukhi, who is your guru?" I mean, sometimes like the parents, they would talk to the kids like that, you know, who are you going to get married to later on in life? You know, who is your guru? Is there incense burning back there? Because it's okay. Because I have problems with it. So it's heavy incense. So he would say, "Who is your guru?" And he would say, "Well, my guru is Sridhar Chaitanya." And his father said, "How do you know that?" And then there's this whole story about Sridhar Chaitanya. It's very interesting. It's part of the Shyamananda story that Sridhar Chaitanya was the disciple of, or is the disciple of, Gauridas Pandit. And Gauridas Pandit in Krishna Leela is Subal, one of Krishna's coward boyfriends. And Sridhar Chaitanya later, previously was known as Hridayananda. Like we have our Hridayananda Goswami. It's not the same person. But anyway, modern incarnation. So previously he was known as Hridayananda. What happened is that this Gauridas Pandit, who was Subal, had these very, very special deities of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Because one time, Lord Nityananda went to visit him, and he wouldn't let them go. And they said, well, how about if we pose for some deities of ourselves? So these deities were actually made with Lord Chaitanya posing. I mean, I'm sure he didn't just sit there for like, you know, 3 or 4 days while they were making the deities, but at least the sculptor got a chance to look at Lord Chaitanya, and they made the deities of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Very, very special deities. So, once upon a time, Gauridas Pandit, he had to go somewhere, and he said to his disciple, Hridayananda, you have to take care of these deities while I'm gone. So it got to be very close to Gaur Purnima, and Hridayananda was thinking of sending invitations out to everyone for the Gaur Purnima festival, so he sent invitations out to all the Vaishnavas, the Mahants around there. And then when his guru got back, Gauridas Pandit got back, he said, what have you done? Without my permission, you have sent invitations out and invited people. You're usurping the position of guru. You think you're better than me. And so he kicked his disciple out. He just said, Hridayananda, get out. And what happened is that during that Gaur Purnima festival, Gauridas Pandit went to greet the deities that morning. They play the Govinda prayers. And they opened the curtains and the deities weren't there. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda just weren't there. It was a blank altar. You can imagine, let's say, if we had greeting the deities here and Radhagalokananda weren't on the altar and they had followed Mother Krishna Priyan to her house or something like that. That would be interesting. That's something for dundabuts.com to write about. So anyway, so... So that's really what happened. These deities had followed the disciple of Gauridas Pandit, Hridayananda, to where he was residing in the bank of the Ganges. And he was worshiping them there. So when Gauridas Pandit understood what had happened, he got really angry. Not only angry at his disciple, but he was angry at Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Now, of course, this indicates that he was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because normally if one gets angry at the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gets killed or some other unfortunate thing happens. But in the case of Gauridas Pandit, it was like a loving exchange, like you see between Radha and Krishna. There's this man, or this anger, that's exhibited sometimes. And there's even this place in Vrindavan called Manasarovara, where Krishna bows down and touches Radharani's feet, and he's crying, forgive me, forgive me. And she's standing there with her arms folded in front of her chest. And, you know, Krishna has to really cower before Srimati Radharani. So this is one of the higher stages of Mahabhav, which is called Man, which is anger. Gauridas is angry towards Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Was transcendental. So he went to where Lord Chaitanya and where Lord Nityananda were, and he was having a stick in his hand as if to beat them. Very, very angry. And so when Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, the deities, actually saw this stick, they jumped into the heart of Hridayananda. And Gauridas Pandit was shocked. Oh my God. My disciple must really be a good disciple. And because the deities, you can imagine with Radhagalokananda, they jumped into the heart of Mother Krishna Priya. If I was angry with Mother Krishna Priya and then they jumped into the heart, that would be pretty interesting. Therefore, Hridayananda at that point got the name Hriday Chaitanya. Very, very special person. Hriday Chaitanya means the Lord Chaitanya who is in the heart of the person. Hriday Chaitanya. Hriday means heart. So, eventually, Duki, he went to see his guru, Hriday Chaitanya. And when he went to see his guru changed his name a little bit, and he called him Duki Krishnadas. So that's interesting, Duki Krishnadas. Why would a Why would a person feel unhappy if he's Krishna Das? That's an interesting name, Dukhi Krishna Das. The reason is, when he's feeling the separation from Krishna, there's this transcendental unhappiness, which is actually the greatest ecstasy. This is described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopa Kumara says, I don't understand whether they're experiencing the greatest misery or the greatest ecstasy. In other words, it's for the great devotees, it's almost indistinguishable. The unhappiness is the greatest happiness. Anyway, the unhappiness of separation or the impending separation. And in other words, there's such extreme emotions in the spiritual world, they cannot even be calculated. It's like being in the spiritual world is like being on an emotional roller coaster 24 hours a day. You understand roller coaster? For those of you who are not Americans, a roller coaster, how do you say it in Spanish? A rueda de la fortuna? Okay, a rueda de la fortuna. Montaña Rosa. We got Spanish, plain Spanish, and Mexican Spanish. They're different. Montaña de la Rosa. Montaña. Russian mountain. That's interesting. So anyway, I was once on a roller coaster, and it was an emotional disaster for me. I was praying to Krishna to get me off of this thing, because at every moment you're either going up. And then, boom, the bottom drops out. So being in the spiritual world is like that. You know, you're going up to the highest that we're going to be meeting with Krishna, and then the bottom drops out. You get separated from Krishna. Anyway, so that's why he was called Dukhi Krishna Das. So eventually his spiritual master said that you have to acquire more knowledge, and the best person to acquire more knowledge from is the chief of the Goswamis, most erudite of all the Goswamis, the one who is acknowledged nowadays is practically the most erudite scholar of all times, and that's, of course, Jiva Goswami. The Tattva Sandarbha has just been published by the BBT, and it's a very wonderful book. And, of course, that's part of the Shat Sandarbhas of Srila Jiva Goswami that will be published eventually by the Prabhupada's BBT. So he was sent to Vrindavan to study with Srila Jiva Goswami, and at the same time he became friends with Srinivasacharya and Narottama Das Thakur. There were three devotees who would always be closely associated. And he was given a particular service to execute by Srila Jiva Goswami, in addition to studying, because studying is one thing, but actually one has to put into practice what he or she studies in order to realize that. You know, we can study, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, learn all the verses in the Bhagavad Gita, but ultimately, if you don't act on that knowledge, you don't get any realization. So he was given a very humble service to perform. Just like when many of us joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, we were sent to clean the pots or clean the toilets or something like that. And one should always remain like that. Like it's described about a spiritual master, Samit Pani Shochiyam Brahmanishtam. The first quality mentioned of a bona fide spiritual master is, of course, fetching firewood or water for the spiritual master, which means always being a humble menial servant of the guru. So he was given this service of cleaning the kunja called the Kanaka Kunja, and he was in so much ecstasy doing this humble service that he would faint many times while doing it, while cleaning the kunja. So at this kunja, it's called in the kunja there's a place called the Kalpa Kunja Mandir, where Radha and Krishna had pastimes. And of course, there's still pastimes going on in the unmanifest way, in Vrindavan. And one actually has to have the vision to see these pastimes. Of course, they're not manifest to the ordinary personality. Just like when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present and he was visiting Vrindavan, then what happened is that many people thought that they had seen Krishna dancing on the heads of the Kaliya serpent at night, when it was actually a fisherman holding up a lantern to attract the fish. Because of course, you shouldn't go fishing, But one of the things fishermen do at night to attract fish is they hold up some light and the fish come to the surface because of that. And so the fisherman was doing that, and everyone in Vrindavan was saying, wow, we've seen Krishna dancing on Kaliya. And even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servants said to him, can I go to see Krishna tonight? And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu slapped him. Sometimes a good slap is necessary. Didn't hurt him, he just went bing, like that. You know, what do you think? Krishna's going to appear in this Kali Yuga? Krishna appears in Dwapara Yuga. And so later on it was revealed it was just a fisherman with a lantern. But anyway, Radha and Krishna's pastimes are going on in an unmanifested way. Sometimes devotees think that they will see Radha and Krishna's pastimes by taking rest in some kunj at night. Anyway, there's all these stories, because there's stories about how even the monkeys leave the kunj at night because Radha and Krishna are there. So I know some devotees who actually hid themselves in the bushes and to see Radha and Krishna's pastimes. And of course they didn't. They actually became crazy. So one day, one night when Radha and Krishna were dancing in the kunja, Radharani's ankle bell, sort of nupura, slipped off under a desire tree. Srila Prabhupada describes that every tree in Vrindavan is a desire tree. So the next morning when Shyamananda, actually he was Duki Krishnadas at that time, he wasn't called Shyamananda until later, was sweeping the kunj, he found this glowing nupura, and he fell unconscious, and first of all, he tied it on his neck, but then he thought, you know, this is really glowing, people are going to ask questions about it, and people may want to steal it, and then he buried it in the kunja. So later on, Radharani discovered that her nupura, or ankle bell, was missing. So she sent Lalita to try to retrieve it. And Lalita dressed herself as the ordinary Raj village girl. And she went to Duki Krishnadas and said to Duki Krishnadas, she said, my friend has lost this nupura. Have you seen it? And he understood it was actually Radharani's ankle bell. And he said to her, I know who you actually are. You can't fool me. I want to see your real form. And she said, that's not possible because you have a material body. And he said, yes, it is possible. It's by your mercy I can do this. So sometimes you actually see devotees even arguing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the Supreme Personality of Godhead's associates, and defeating them in argumentation. This is like a pastime. Like, there's that one story where the younger Brahmin was trying to get Gopal to walk across, not the Gopal we have here in North Carolina, but the Sakshi Gopal, to walk across India to witness an older Brahmana's marriage promise. And the deity said to him, just remember me, and everything will be all right. And the younger Brahmana said, no, it's not going to be all right. You have to come and speak and witness the promise with your own mouth. And then Krishna said to him, but, you know, whoever heard of a deity walking all the way across India? And the younger Brahmana said, that's true, but you're talking, so if you can talk, you can walk. So whoever heard of a deity talking, so you can also walk. And then Krishna, Prabhupada said, was defeated by this younger Brahmana. So you actually see sometimes there's this interesting exchange between devotees and other devotees, or devotees and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in which, you know, appears to violate etiquette, but it's not actually a violation of etiquette. It's actually a rasika exchange. So then he saw her actual form, and he fainted, and he put Lalita's feet on his head. Pretty nice, isn't it? And then he said, I want a boon. A boon, of course, is a benediction. He said, I want to be your servant and serve Radha and Krishna eternally. And at that time, Lalita gave him a mantra by which he could see Radha and Krishna anytime and enter into their pastimes. And I do not know that mantra. And I wish I did know that mantra. So, of course, the Hare Krishna Maha mantra. If you chant the Hare Krishna Maha mantra purely, then you can enter into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. But the problem is we're not chanting the Hare Krishna Maha mantra purely, we're chanting with offenses or namabhas chanting. So anyway, so then he dug up the ankle bell and he gave the ankle bell to Lita to give to Radharani. At that time when he dug up the ankle bell, the spade, that means the little shovel, spade is a little shovel, that he was utilizing turned golden color. And Lalita touched his head at that point and gave him the name Shyamananda. And she touched his head with this nupura, and somehow or other there was a red dot in the middle and tilak, the Shyamananda tilak that you see in Vrindavan. And she said to him, don't tell anybody. Now that's kind of hard not to tell anybody because he's walking around with new tilak. But anyway, she said, don't tell anyone except for Jiva Goswami. So he cried naturally, fainted, went into his swoon, and several hours later, he came back to external consciousness and went to Jiva Goswami. And he also had, at that point, a golden complexion. So he actually radiated gold. Actually, those of us who were with Prabhupada saw that Prabhupada had a golden complexion, too. I remember the first time I met Prabhupada, that we went into Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada was dressed in gumsha. He just had a gumsha, he was sitting on his bed, and he was like pure gold, molten gold, is Prabhupada's complexion. It was pretty amazing. Even, of course, we had this one interesting story that when Prabhupada sat on the Vyasa Sun, there was this big Vyasa Sun that was made by Amarendra Prabhu. But Prabhupada sat in the Vyasa, and one day later, his footprints were glowing. Prabhupada's footprints were glowing. So anyway, we were all new devotees. We were looking at the footprints and said, wow, it's glowing. Wow, it's glowing. Anyway, so Shyamananda had a golden complexion at that time. And Jiva Goswami asked him, where did you get that new tilak and that complexion? Can you imagine, like, if a devotee, I mean, just put it in a modern context, if a devotee just, like, came to the temple one day with different tilak and he was golden, you know, it would be shocking. And not only Jiva, but other devotees were shocked at this. Shyamananda said, it's by your mercy. And Jiva Goswami said, no, you tell me the story. And he asked to see this spade, the little shovel, and Shyamananda told him the whole story. And Jiva Goswami, even though he was a senior devotee, said, at that time, I have become your property. But you should always remember that it's by the mercy of your guru, Hriday Chaitanya. Don't think that you can directly associate with Radha and Krishna. It's all by the mercy of your spiritual master. So this is very, very important. And this is elaborated on later on in the story. But the Vrajabhasis, they didn't know this story. So they thought that Jiva Goswami had committed an offense by reinitiating Hriday Chaitanya. I mean, Shyamananda, Dukhi Krishnadas, sorry. By reinitiating Dukhi Krishnadas. And so this is, you know, it's a major thing. You know, reinitiation is actually quite offensive. Quite offensive. If the guru is actually in good standing, if the guru is not in good standing, that's another point. But, not very good. So, anyway, just like sometimes devotees, they go to Radha Kund and they get reinitiated. Or even when Prabhupada was on the planet, the devotees would sometimes go to a holy place and the person, you know, the pandas, they would try to make money saying, I can be your Tirtha Guru. Actually, Prabhupada mentions this in some letters. He said, you know, these people would actually go, the devotees would go, I can be your Tirtha Guru, and then he wrote to Prabhupada, you know, I've accepted so-and-so as my Tirtha Guru. Probably said it's a bunch of nonsense. So, anyway, the news was conveyed to Hriday Chaitanya, who was the guru of Dukhi Krishnadas, who was also Shyamananda. Hriday Chaitanya was naturally very angry. He sent the devotees to Braj to find out or to punish Shyamananda. Srila Jiva Goswami explained to these devotees who went to investigate that the name in the tilak was actually given by Hriday Chaitanya in a dream. So Shyamananda said, yes, it was a dream, and my guru appeared to me. He corroborated the story that Jiva Goswami was giving. And so all the devotees went back to Bengal, and Hriday Chaitanya said, wait a second. You think I did that in a dream? I don't remember that dream. And sometimes you do have disciples who say, you know, I had a dream, Gurudev, and you told me this. And it's just, what do they say, Maya Guru. Like the demons sometimes that appeared in Krishna's pastimes, like Vatsasura, you know, the calf demon, or something like that, or Palambasura. You know, Palambasura was carried away Balaram, and he made believe he was a coward boy. And suddenly he manifested his real form, and Balaram said, Maya, this carrier has changed. And of course, then Balaram quickly did away with him. So Hriday Chaitanya said, there was no dream. Dreams should not be taken seriously. That's interesting. So whenever we have a dream, we should corroborate that with the other Vaishnavas, you know, especially not nonsense dreams. You know, I dreamt I was bungee jumping the other night. Is that actually true, Gurudev? No, some dream where the guru appears, or Prabhupada appears, or something happens in the dream. We should be very, very careful about accepting that as evidence. So, then Hriday Chaitanya, being very angry at that point, went to Braj, and he inquired from Shyamananda, who is your guru, he said. And Shyamananda said, you are, and the name of the tilak is by your mercy. And Hriday Chaitanya got very angry, and he said, we're going to wipe it off. And if it remains, then we understand it's real. But if it stays off, then you're bogus. So Shyamananda got very upset at that point, and he chanted this mantra that was taught to him by Lalita Devi. And in his spiritual form, as his, let's say, the physical form remained visible to everyone else, he entered into Radharani's temple in the spiritual world. He began to cry outside of the temple. He had, of course, female form at that point. And his name was Kanaka Manjari. And he said that my husband is beating me. So husband, of course, is the word in Sanskrit is Swami, or Hindi is Swami. Swami means master, and Swami can also mean spiritual master. So he said, my husband wants to beat me. So Lalita was inside the temple making betel nut preparation for Radharani, and she gave the message to bring Kanaka Manjari inside. And Radha was eating the betel nuts, and Lalita was preparing them, and Rupa Manjari was massaging the legs of Srimati Radharani. Quite an intimate pastime, isn't it? And Champaka Lata was fanning Srimati Radharani. So Kanaka Manjari, who was Shyamananda, explained the whole story, and Radharani spoke to Subal, who was the grand... Shyamananda's grand spiritual master and the spiritual master Hriday Chaitanya, and who was Gauridas Pandit. And Subal immediately painted the name Shyamananda on his chest, as well as the tilak on the forehead of this young girl, Kanaka Manjari. So Radharani ordered him at that point, later on, when all this is taken care of, you should tour Orissa and preach Krishna consciousness with Rasika Murari. So in the meantime, in external world, and, you know, what we consider to be the real world, but which in actuality is the illusory world. That's what we think. This is the real world. This isn't the real world. I mean, the temple is, of course. But the real world is actually Radha Krishna's pastimes. Everyone was bewildered. What's going to happen? But Jiva Goswami understood, and he explained that with Subala's mercy, everything will happen nicely. Because Jiva Goswami actually was in touch with the internal pastimes that were going on at that time. So then Hriday Chaitanya tried to rub off the Shyamananda on the chest and the tilak, and just kept reappearing. Every time he rubbed it off, it reappeared. Pretty good, isn't it? But then Hriday Chaitanya, I guess he had some sort of spiritual anger issues. He got upset again because Shyamananda was not in his bhav. In other words, he was a coward boy, as was his guru. And he was thinking, you know, how can my disciple be a gopi? This is not appropriate. So, and actually sometimes people outside of ISKCON, they make some propaganda, you know, they say Prabhupada was a coward boy. And of course it's none of our business who Prabhupada was in the spiritual world. Prabhupada oftentimes, when he was asked that question, said, that question you do not need to ask. You know, he was asked about his deep internal relationship with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he replied like that. So sometimes people make that propaganda that Prabhupada was a coward boy. And, you know, there's some things they bring up, like worship of Guru Nitya. I'm not going to get into all the details about why the point is made by some people. But whether it's true or not is another issue. I'm not discussing that issue. But then they say, well, then you should accept me because I am on the conjugal platform so you can become a gopi. And so this is actually not proper logic because let's say if your guru was a coward boy, which would be pretty nice in the spiritual world, that doesn't mean you can't become a gopi. I mean, first of all, deserve then desire. It's not, you know, you think you want to become a gopi and you haven't even learned to keep the temple clean. What's the use of it? You want to be a gopi and you can't chant your japa nicely every day. You want to be a gopi and you're smoking cigarettes, you know. Gopis don't smoke cigarettes. Anyway, so, I mean, it's kind of funny that people want to become gopis. You see this in if you go to Braj, you see many of these devotees from overseas, particularly the Russian devotees, they want to be gopis, and they're just new devotees. They want to be gopis. Just like when I joined the movement, I didn't want to be a gopi. I wanted to be a coward boy, but you know, I didn't know what a coward boy was. It's just that I was attracted to hearing about coward boys because myself and my friends joined the movement together and we were like coward boys because we used to take care of cows. So, anyway, so get back to the story. Hriday Chaitanya was upset again because his guru, his disciple, sorry, was in a different bhav. He says, you're unchaste. And Shyamananda began to preach to his guru. He said, look, even Subal, who's Gauridas Pandit, serves Radha and Krishna. Of course, this is a fact that every single person, entity in the spiritual world is serving in the Radha and Krishna conjugal loving affairs. I mean, you have the pets of Radharani, the pets of Krishna, the different parrots of Radharani and parrots of Krishna that are arguing about the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna. Everybody's making arrangements for the Radha and Krishna conjugal loving affairs. Like when we hear this Nikunjayuna Radhikeli Siddhi, that refers to every bona fide resident in the spiritual world, every guru, bona fide guru, because they're all, that's the business there. That's their business in Krishna Loka. So, Hriday Chaitanya didn't like that explanation because the disciple was preaching to him. And Hriday Chaitanya began to beat his disciple with a stick. It's interesting, just like Gauridas Pandit was ready to beat Lord Chaitanya, it seems that it's part of the bhav of that particular disciplic succession, that Hriday Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya was almost beaten by Gauridas Pandit. And so in the same way, Hriday Chaitanya was beating, he actually beat Shyamananda with a stick. And that night, Hriday Chaitanya got chastised by Lord Chaitanya because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream And Lord Chaitanya was all bloody. He had sores all over his body and all bloody. And then Lord Chaitanya revealed that this is what you did to my dear devotee, Shyamananda. And Lord Chaitanya forgave Radha Chaitanya, and he said, as an atonement, you should perform 12 festivals in my glorification. So later on, as we mentioned in the beginning of the class, Jiva Goswami ordered Shyamananda to go to Bengal, then Orissa, and then he met Rasikananda, and they preached together everywhere in Orissa and made Orissa Krishna conscious. So that's the story of Shyamananda. We have about a half minute left to class. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Who should I pick, husband or wife? Who raised their hand first?
How does a person think that, oh, I want to be a gopi? I mean, in other words,
where's that mood coming from?
Well, there's bona fide and unborn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's one point or another one may feel that way. So how does one know there's a bona fide?
Okay, well, let's talk about it. The unbona fide way is actually a projection of one's own, you know, material mentality. The bona fide way is, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is that as you progress in devotional service, you come eventually to the Raghunuga platform, and then you have a natural attraction, first of all, to serving a particular resident of Vrindavan. See, before you understand what your svarup is, then you have to understand who you're attracted to serve. And then so you approach your guru or your, you know, Shiksha guru, Diksha guru, whatever, and you say, you know, I have this attraction in my heart. And the guru can ascertain whether it's a bona fide attraction or not. And then he can tell you that you're serving under, like, Vrinda Devi or whatever in the spiritual world, or Subal or Sudam in the spiritual world. And then there's this Akadasa Bhava, which we don't really get into in ISKCON that much, but basically Bhaktivinoda Thakur lists that as a bona fide practice. Eventually when one is qualified, one gets the different aspects of his personality and his service in the spiritual world. But, you know, we don't do that. I mean, that's not with neophyte devotees. It's not done in ISKCON right now. But eventually when devotees, you know, after about a million lifetimes for me, then I'll understand these things by direct perception. Right now I just understand these things theoretically. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about this, the Jiva Dharma. The Jiva Dharma is...
We can cultivate this through reading
books like... Yeah, we should understand the Jiva Dharma and also associate with devotees who actually have attained that platform. So we could corroborate our own feelings to understand whether they're coming from the mundane platform or the transcendental platform.